This is Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight's subject, the Human Potential Movement. Something new and really significant, or just another phony fad? Tonight's guest, psychologist William Schutz, author of Joy, Expanding Human Awareness. You call and ask your questions directly by calling Night Call Collect from anywhere in the country. Night Call's host in New York City is Del Shields.
Good evening. Imagine for a moment what it would be like if we all were completely honest and completely candid with ourselves and each other. And this complete honesty and candor would have to include the diplomatic white lies we tell each other, as well as the major dark truths about ourselves we unconsciously sweep under our own individual rugs. In other words, none of us would ever be phony or uptight, and we would really know each other and every one of our own problems and how to deal with them. If we got rid of all of our guilts, hypocrisy, and absurdity, would there be complete chaos, or would we be on the way to realizing the total fulfillment of our potential as human beings? Dr. William Schutz is a resident psychologist at the Esalen Institute in Big Sur, California, a center of something called the Human Potential Movement, which seems to be spreading across the country. Dr. Schutz is also author of the book Joy, Expanding Human Awareness, and our guest tonight. Dr. Schutz is standing by in Big Sur to answer your questions and share your comments and conversation about the Human Potential Movement. You may speak to him direct at our national number, which is area code 212-749-3311. And of course, you may call us collect. That's national calls on area code 212-749-3311. Listeners in Colorado and Texas and on the West Coast may also call collect by calling area code 212-749-3357. That's area code 212-749-3357 for West Coast calls. And in the New York area, you may always call us at 866-5010. That's 866-5010 for local calls. Dr. Schutz, good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Doctor, after a stay at Esalen, what kind of person returns to society?
Well, of course, it varies depending on the experience here at Esalen. But I think if we're successful, a person can return to society being much freer, much more aware of what he's like, and much more autonomous and able to make decisions for himself.
Is the basic aim at Esalen to redesign the very rigid and emotionless society that we live in, or do the members become a different society in itself?
No, I don't think the members become a different society. That is, we have here lots of people who come to our workshop, and then they return to whatever walk of life they've come from. And if they've had a good experience, then they're different, and they often become very influential wherever they are.
Doctor, how honest do people want to become?
Well, I think being totally honest, it really is in two parts. One of them is that you can be honest to other people. You can tell them how you really feel. And the other, which is even more difficult, is being honest with yourself. And I think to the degree that you have things about yourself that you don't really like and you don't want to face, then of course you don't want to be honest. One of the things we try to do here is to help people through those fears so that they can open themselves up to themselves and then be much freer and more honest.
Well, what does a person do if one comes back from or returns from the Esalen Institute and they are more free than they were prior to staying there at the Institute for whatever period, and they come back and they find themselves kind of free by themselves and other people are still uptight? What happens to them?
Different things happen. Sometimes they can have some influence on these other people. Other times they find that what they're doing is not really what they want to do, and they quit. That is, they quit their jobs, or they somehow alter their lives more in accord with what they really want inside. We have a term here we call centering, where somebody is centered if he really is with himself and knows how he feels. And if he does, then he's more able to do to go where he wants to go.
Has the Institute been helpful in helping couples who attend and attempt to find a bit more honesty with themselves and in their relationships?
I think so. We've been doing a lot of work with couples lately. And couples, of course, are about the most emotional groupings you can get. They usually have stored up a whole series of feelings that, in most cases, have never come out. And one of the attempts we make is to try and get those feelings out and get them aired so they can be dealt with. For example, one of the things that we do, which I certainly not advocate for your listeners at this point, but to illustrate, we often ask them for three secrets, things that they have never told their spouse, and which, if they did tell, would most likely jeopardize their relationship. And then throughout the course of a five-day workshop, we try and get these secrets out and have them talk very honestly and directly with each other. As you can imagine, it's sometimes very explosive, but in virtually every case, it has turned out to be very refreshing and clean, and in several cases, the couple has talked about getting divorced and remarried. That is not literally, but just breaking the kind of relationship they did have, which was based on holding back from each other and starting off just totally honest. And sometimes it's a marvel to behold to see them.
This kind of honesty where couples can make a confession to each other results in a much stronger bond later on. Is this what you're saying?
Not always. I think there are times when it turns out that the couple discovers they shouldn't be together. We had one couple lately where they found that the wife in the relationship was really still in love with someone else, which she hadn't wanted to face and hadn't wanted to bring into the marriage. And going through all of this revealed that to her, and they were subsequently divorced, and she went back to the other man, and from what I now know, happily for all three. So it can't be guaranteed that if you get into the relationship thoroughly, that it will necessarily become a stronger one. I think in the overwhelming majority of cases, that is true. But all we're doing is help to clarify what's going on between the two people.
Dr. Schutz, we have calls standing by. We're going to go to our night call listeners. But first, we'd like to remind our listeners that our area code here in New York is area code 212-749-3311. We welcome your calls, we welcome your conversation, and your comments tonight as we are discussing joy, expanding human awareness. And our guest tonight is Dr. William Schutz, calling in from Big Sur, California. Remember, locally, you may call us at 866-5010. And on the West Coast, area code 212-749-3357. Dr. Schutz, we'll take our first call from Detroit, Michigan. Mrs. Bernardi is hearing night call over WJLB. Mrs. Bernardi, good evening.
Good evening.
Your question?
My name is Bernardi.
Bernardi, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Yes. Well, what I want to know, do we have to talk on the subject that you're talking about, or can I talk on what I want to talk about?
No, tonight we are talking about joy expanding human awareness, and we prefer to discuss this particular topic tonight.
Oh, I understand. Well, I'm sorry.
Thank you so much for calling.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. Area code 212-749-3357. That's our West Coast number, and remember, you may call us collect. And our national telephone number, area code 212-749-3311. Our local telephone number in New York is 866-5010. Doctor, getting back to the subject of the couples who are able to attend the Institute and find themselves in a situation where they can be honest with each other, and you mentioned that one particular couple found that she was not really in love with her husband as of the moment, and she was able to go back and marry the man of her choice. Now, does this not add some kind of conflict in terms of the philosophy or the religious philosophy of the organization?
No, I don't think so, because our philosophy, if anything, is that if we can open people up, and I really can't speak for the whole Institute, because obviously there are many people here, I'll just speak for myself. If we can open people up to themselves so that you're more aware of how you actually feel, then I'm assuming that people can act more rationally and more in accord with how they feel. So if you find that through this experience that you do want to remain married and you want to strengthen the marriage, that really is your decision. If you also find that once you're more aware of your feelings, you don't want to be in that situation, then that too is your decision. So actually the philosophy would be to get away from deceiving yourself and to get much more in touch with what you're really feeling. And then what you do about it, of course, is your own individual decision.
Is it not possible that this would open the door to a number of unhappy couples who might seek the Institute as a source for finding reasons to get an immediate divorce?
It's possible. It isn't something that we found particularly. They seem to be a pretty good cross-section. But even that, I would see, is not terribly bad, because one of the worst things about couples that we find are the couples that go along for 15 or 20 years very unhappy and doing very bad things to each other and not wanting to face that fact. And they are just really in a very destructive kind of relationship. And we feel it's much better to get that out and to face it and do something about it, one way or the other. Either try to improve it or maybe end it and try to establish a better relationship. Actually, I'm talking more about the negative one. We have many more instances where people do strengthen their relationship.
Which of the partners generally offers this kind of confession or this kind of willingness to confront their mate? Is it more on the male's part or the female?
Well, the way we set it up, it must be on both parts. A very common secret, probably by far the most common, is adultery. And if I can generalize, which is unsafe, but I'll do it anyway, it often turns out the man admits some adultery on his part, and the woman is usually decimated by this and has a bad time with it. And then often she will offer the same kind of information for herself, and he will be able to take it much less well than she did. And that's often a surprise. But it has to be equal. They both have to reveal their secrets eventually. Or they both do, not have to.
Dr. Schutz, we have a caller standing by. Miss Kuhl is hearing Night Call over WLIB-FM in New York. Miss Kroll, good evening.
Excuse me?
Miss Kroll, am I pronouncing the name correctly?
Yes, Miss Kroll.
Kroll, I'm sorry.
Hello, I'm from Long Island, from Roslyn Heights, and I'd just like to make a comment. Last year I was involved in the tea group program in my school, in high school, and which you were the head of. And I'd just like to comment on what happened, you know, the change that occurred over the year within myself and within a lot of my friends who were involved. And all I can say is that it was really wonderful. And I found myself, I really become so much more honest, both with myself, with friends, with boys, with everyone, with my family, and it's been a wonderful change. And thank you very much for the program.
Thank you.
That's wonderful. Thank you for saying that.
Hello?
Yes?
Yes, I was going to ask, what motivated you to attend?
Well, I really don't know. They told us the year before that it would be an experimental course, and although I was, you know, scared, because then, you know, I really was afraid to try new things, I decided to join. I thought it might be some good, and I joined it, and it was just wonderful. I suppose you know Mr. Doig?
Yes.
Well, he was the leader of our group, and we met every day for the entire year.
Well, it's comments like yours that make this all worthwhile. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Thank you so much for calling.
Goodbye.
This is Night Call in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's our national telephone number, and of course we welcome your calls collect. And our local telephone number in New York is 866-5010. Our guest tonight is Dr. William Schutz, who's author of Joy, The Expanding Human Awareness, and he's calling in from Big Sur, California. We'll return to Dr. Schutz right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest psychologist William Schutz after station identification. In our city and state, and all across the United States, people are talking about trouble, black and white trouble. Some call it racial tension, or see poverty as the real problem. or say law and order has given way to anarchy in our streets. Most people agree, at least, that there is a crisis, and we are a people with many unanswered questions. This station believes you deserve to ask your own questions and get some answers, or at least opinions, from people who should know what they're talking about. So we bring you Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show where you ask your questions and express your opinions to leaders such as John Lindsay, Ralph Abernathy, John Gardner, Stokely Carmichael, and Sergeant Shriver. Night Call, the new nationwide radio forum on important issues facing you and the rest of the nation. Night Call, each weeknight. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call from anywhere in the country to psychologist William Schultz about the human potential movement. Again, Del Shields.
And we return to our guest, Dr. William Schultz, who is calling in from Big Sur, California, and we'll take our next call from St. Paul, Minnesota. Mrs. Joan Snyder is hearing Night Call of WPBC. Miss Snyder, good evening.
Good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
I am so happy to hear the doctor on the radio. Now, I myself went to a child guidance clinic in St. Paul here. I've been twice divorced, sadly to say. And I went through a psychologist myself. In fact, two of them. There were five of us girls went through at the same time. And I really found out some things about myself, about my marriage, about people in general, how to talk to them, why do I talk to them this way, why do I act the way I do, why do I do the things I do. I don't know, it's so hard to explain. It's just a new awareness, a new awakening for me. In fact, I think psychologists are far better, in my estimation, than a psychiatrist. Now, on the question of what he is doing, how does he think religion comes in on this, in helping people?
Dr. Schultz?
Yeah.
Joy.
How does religion come in?
Mm-hmm.
I think it comes in something like this, that I have worked in a number of situations with church people, and very often the reaction that that I get is that in the groups that are run, and most of this occurs in a group setting, the kinds of feelings that one has toward people are the kinds that the church talks about but rarely achieves. That is, if we do want to have the brotherhood of man, or we do want to have love and affection toward each other, it isn't enough to have someone get up and give a lecture, which we call a sermon, once a week, and talk about how important it would be if it could occur, that we have to work hard to make it come about.
Well, where do you
some of the things that we're doing are in that direction, and I think accomplish this often.
Mm-hmm. Where do you think people are failing then when they do get married? Through religion, or through their
Hello?
Own understanding of themselves, or their mate, or what?
I didn't hear the question.
I says, where are people failing? Through their own understanding of themselves, or their mate, or what?
Well, I think it all starts out with one's feelings toward himself. And as long as those aren't very good, then they have to be put onto other people.
Well, then evidently this must derive from their home life and how they are brought up.
There isn't any place else it could come from, is there?
Mm-hmm.
And that's
okay,
where we start.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you very much for calling.
Mm-hmm.
This is Night Call in New York. The Human Potential Movement is our subject tonight, and our guest, Dr. William Schultz. We'll take our next call from Louisville, Kentucky. Mr. Clark is here in Night Call of WLRX-FM. Mr. Clark, good evening, sir.
How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
Listen, I'm listening to you on the radio here, and some question that I'd like to ask. When a couple have been married previously, and it has a known fact that the male was more was what you call unfaithful, and this was fact was known prior to the marriage. But over a period of 3 or 4 years, sort of what you call walked the straight, and narrow path, you know. And there seems to be a conflict as to between this couple, because she doesn't really believe that a man can change these ways, even though he grows older, in their 40s. And I was just wondering how you go about convincing a mate that this is really the way you feel, the way that, your attitude has changed. You found someone you truly and sincerely appreciate and love, and you feel no necessity for what you might say extracurricular activity. Do I make that question clear?
Yeah, yes. The question is a lot clearer than the answer. It's very hard to say. You know, this is kind of armchair therapy from 3,000 miles away.
I understand that.
And I really have to know much more about your situation. All I can say is that men do change, and so do women. I know that because I have myself undergone quite a change in that regard. And that's about all I can say. Whether you are one of the men who are in fact changed or not, you could probably look inside and know better than I could.
Mm-hmm.
And just how you go about convincing your spouse, that, you know, it's a little too hard for me to say at this distance.
Well, what I'm mainly concerned with is that prior to this marriage, she was married for 20 years and I was married for 18, which means that we both had a experience in life and in marriage, and yet it's difficult to say, well, you know, you didn't love your first mate because you couldn't live with them for that length of time if you didn't have a feeling for them. But on the other hand, it could have been a relationship where it was more platonic, or children interfered with a divorce, making it almost impossible through the eyes of the church and things of that nature, until you finally just got to the point where you felt it was insufferable, and then
yeah,
you went ahead and got your divorce, and now you have really got the kind of life that you've always desired, always wanted.
Could I interrupt you a minute?
Yes.
It sounds like you're trying to convince me, when I'm really not the one that has to be convinced.
I think
went to somebody local, you might be able to work this out. It sounds like you are sincere about it.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Clark, thank you for calling, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. The Human Potential Movement, our guest, Dr. William Schutz, and our national telephone number is area code 212-749-3311. Remember, you may call us collect. And we welcome your comments and your conversation. We'll take our next call from Seattle, Washington. Mr. Paul Werenberg, I hope we've got this one correct, is calling in from KUOW-FM. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Dr. Shook.
Good evening.
I would like to take a look at the larger implications of the general philosophy of human relations that you apparently propose or advocate in your clinical work. Now, if people are totally honest with each other, essentially this seems to say that they accept whatever they are. And what implications do you feel this has for a value structure, a sort of a societal value structure? In other words, we teach sort of a Judeo-Christian ethic in this country. At least it comes through in your early conditioning and through the schools and politicians' speeches, etc. And I'm wondering if there's any basic conflict between a total honesty in human relations and an attempt to stick to some sort of a standard or a set of values that is handed down from above. In other words, what do you think? Would our society survive as it presently exists if this sort of behavior were carried on a very widespread basis? In other words, if it was the norm.
Let me put it more strongly. I think, in a sense, society has a far greater chance to survive if we do that, and there's a lot of danger right now I think, due partly to the fact that we don't talk honestly and directly with each other. I think, for example, some of the ethics of the Judeo-Christian tradition have to be re-examined in light of more modern knowledge. For example, if we take the dictum of love thy neighbor as thyself, which is a very important cornerstone, well, what we know about how people love themselves, that's a very bad rule to follow, because most people don't love themselves. In fact, most people have a very bad opinion of themselves. And if we were to follow that dictum, we would not be treating people very well. So it requires a much more sensitive knowledge of what we're like and what people are like in order to have a set of ethics. And my own feeling is that, if I can just expand on this point a little bit, that one of the things that we have to recognize is the lack of honesty is causing all kinds of chaotic trouble in the country at the moment. For example, one of the most dramatic examples is the credibility gap, which is really saying that the administration is not talking honestly to the people. And I think behind the student riots is the same kind of protest, that the administrator is not talking to the student in an honest, direct fashion. And I think the black-white issue also hinges around that, that people aren't being straight with each other. They're not telling it like it is. And I think this ferment is now all over the country. The reaction to the fact that people lie, that they're evasive, that they're hypocritical, and really hide it behind words like being diplomatic and tactful, which are just other ways of saying don't tell the truth. And I do think that if we started telling the truth, it would be very difficult and very disruptive for a while. But I think afterwards, it is a tremendously refreshing experience, and one that is much deeper and richer and makes people happier, which I think is basically the only way we'll get around things like violence, that people just must be happier than they now are.
Well, I tend to agree with you very much, but I'm not sure that it is within the capacity of human nature to be completely honest.
We see it here all the time. I mean, the people will come in at the beginning of a five-day workshop, and they're saying what you're saying, that people can't do that. You can't possibly tell people exactly what you feel about them. They won't like you. They'll hit you. You won't have any friends. And as things get opened up and they try it out, they find all these things simply are not true, that you not only have, you have more friends, because people like it when you're honest and like it when they know where they stand with you. And they always have suspected anyway you didn't like them, and now you tell them and they can work it out, and it's much, much better. So what I'm saying is that people are far stronger than we think they are, and they certainly can be much more honest and take it and come away with a new kind of relating to people that simply is not experienced prior to that.
Well, I think, again, I agree with what you're saying, but the problem that I'm pointing to is the fact that I guess what I mean is that many people don't agree with you. Many people perceive only a short-term self-interest, and often this short-term self-interest involves a fair portion of dishonesty. And so, from a psychological point of view, do you feel that this, the statistical fact that a fair percentage of any population group is going to find it somewhat natural to behave on a dishonest basis, do you think this can ever be overcome by any amount of education, or do you feel that it's sort of an intrinsic trait that we have to design our society around?
Now, I'm not only certain that it can be overcome, that people can be honest, but I think it has to be that way. And I think whether or not you predict it, you have to assume that. But from all the experience I've had, I would say that people can live with virtually total honesty, and that the kind of life and the kind of feeling and relating gets away from a lot of the alienation, and it's far richer and more gratifying.
Mr. Wernberg, thank you so much for calling, sir.
Thank you.
This is Night Call in New York. We have calls standing by from Flint, Michigan, from Clearwater, Florida, and from New York. We'll take those calls right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest psychologist William Schutz after station identification. Next week on Night Call, Monday, the new 26-year-old head of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, Phil Hutchings, says the black man can no longer afford to be just angry. Now he has to be smart, too. Tuesday, Jonathan Kozol, author of Death at an Early Age, the book that says that's exactly what happens intellectually to most young blacks in ghetto schools. Wednesday, the man who runs Urban Coalition self-help projects in St. Louis, Donald Bourgeois. Thursday, President Elizabeth Kuntz of the NEA. She says paternalism is dead, but there are still an awful lot of people who haven't read the obituary notices. And Friday, Dr. J. Edward Carruthers of the Methodist Board of National Missions. He also says paternalism has to go, that kindness or charity doesn't make it anymore. Now it has to be faith, hope, and justice. All this next week on Night Call. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call. From anywhere in the country to psychologist William Schutz about the human potential movement. Again, Del Shields.
And welcome to the Night Call stations who join us for the second half hour. Tonight our guest is Dr. William Schutz, calling in from Big Sur, California. And we're discussing the honesty of how honest can people be or how honest do people want to be. And we will take our next call from Flint, Michigan. Mr. Hedrick is hearing Night Call of WMRP-FM. Mr. Hedrick, good evening, sir. Mr. Hedrick has left us. All right, we'll go to Clearwater, Florida. Mr. Chapman is hearing Night Call of WFLA. Good evening, Mr. Chapman.
Hello.
Mr. Chapman?
Yes.
Good evening, sir.
I didn't know what I was going to get on or not.
Well, your answer. What is your question?
Okay. I just think you about the serious problem of delinquency. What do you think?
Could you speak a little louder, sir?
Yep. Well, I turned my radio down.
Thank you.
I was thinking about the serious problem of delinquency. What do you think, and what do you think is a cure as of today? Maybe this question I'm getting is maybe out of order. How can we cure, how can we educate young children today to avoid delinquency? We have a lot of it here down in Florida.
Well, let me try. Of course, that's such a broad question, it would be hard to go into it in too much detail. Let me mention one thing. We talk often about children should respect their parents. But I think what is more often overlooked is that parents should respect their children. And that often doesn't occur. I think my own feeling about it
is... Is my radio too loud for you?
No.
Okay. Sorry. Okay.
Sir, if you turn down your radio, you could hear the doctor through the phone.
Okay. Yes, doctor.
I think that about the only thing I can say in general on such a big question as that is to follow the line that I've been pursuing here, which is to be open and honest with children is a way of communicating to them that you have respect for them. That is, that you think they're strong enough to be able to deal with the reality of the world, and that often makes them feel like they are important, competent people.
But doctor, don't you think the parents should be educated first before the children are?
Educated in what way?
And to respect the children. I mean, a lot of parents, as I know of them, they just nonchalant in taking care of their children. They just let them run the wire in there. They don't do. Give them the proper family care they should have. And I think if the family would give their children a little bit more attention and more respect. Maybe the children respect the parents a little more.
It's true, but I have the feeling you want me just to agree with your point of view here, and it's so generally stated that it's hard to disagree with that. You know, I think if parents are too nonchalant, they shouldn't be, or if they're too disciplinary, they shouldn't be. But it's hard to get a very specific answer to this, except, again, let me just say in general that a parent should look into himself and find out how he really feels about the child. And see what it's like to tell a child exactly what's going on inside himself, the parent.
Well, I have
start
no
to establish
my,
an
I have
honest
no
relationship
own,
with it.
I have no children of my own, but I'm only observing other children. That's why I asked that question.
Well, Doctor, since we're talking about honesty, is it possible that the outgrowth of some of the juvenile delinquency may be attributed to the fact that parents are not being honest about their children, that some parents do not want the children or do not actually love the children?
Yes, I think that's very true. And the tragedy of it all is that there's really no place to hide. If a parent doesn't love his child, the child knows it at some level. He knows that, whether he's told that or not. I mean, even in an infant, you can tell by the way in which your parent squeezes you or the impatience in the voice. Or there are a thousand cues that give you away. And that's why it usually turns out that even if the problem is as severe as the parent doesn't think he loves the child, it's almost always better to bring it out in the open and talk about it. Because the child knows anyway. And the more it's up front, the more effectively you can deal with it.
Don't you think, Doctor, a little more fatherly love towards the child would bring that out?
Sure, I'm sure it would, but the problem is why can't the love be shown and felt? But, of course, the love is basic, but one of the biggest problems we have is not only how to express it, but how to feel love, and that comes about very early, too.
Mr. Chapman, thank you for calling,
okay,
sir.
I hope my question was of some interest.
Well, it certainly was, sir. We thank you for calling. Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. The Human Potential Movement is what we're discussing tonight with our guest, Dr. William Schutz, who's calling in from Big Sur, California. Remember our national telephone number, area code 212-749-3311. We welcome your calls, collect, as well as your comments and your conversation. On the West Coast, you may call us at area code 212-749-3357. That's the West Coast only, 749-3357. We'll take our next call from the West Coast, from San Diego, California. We have a listener who's hearing Night Call over KOGO-FM. Good evening.
I'd like to ask the speaker if he believes that people can learn to be completely honest all the time.
If they could learn to be completely honest all the time?
Yes.
No, I wouldn't say all the time. I wouldn't say all of anything. The thing that I'm really saying is that based on my own personal experience and my development and in all the people I've seen, people can be far more honest than we think they can. Now, I won't say that that's true of absolutely every situation, but it's true of almost every situation.
Well, if a person starts telling some white lies, then won't he have to tell some more fiction in order to cover up the fiction that he has already told, and won't this be sort of a chain reaction?
Yeah, and white lies is the word that we have invented to make ourselves feel better. The fact is, it's a lie, and we often pass it off as, well, we're doing it for somebody else's own good, but I think it's much more frequent that we mean we won't feel comfortable telling the truth. So I'm agreeing with you.
Well, I'm wondering how a person acts after he gets out of the school that you were talking about, where they learn to be completely honest. When he gets into society where people lie to each other, and won't he eventually fall back into that pattern again?
It depends on what kind of experience he's had here. If it's been a more superficial experience, which does happen to some people, then when he goes back into his own society, he will be influenced by it and probably go back to his old pattern. On the other hand, if he's had a very good experience here, the likelihood is that he'll be able to withstand it, and as I said earlier, probably even begin to influence other people. It's rather remarkable, I think, even as we can see from the questions here, that when you just say to people, be honest, and you yourself begin by being honest, people are really hungry for that, and they are very attracted to it most of the time.
Dr. Schutz, what is the method that's used to transform these people who come to the Esalen Institute and try to develop a set of new honesty or a set of new honest rules or to face honesty? What kind of method do you use?
Well, of course, we use a variety of methods. I've mentioned one with the secret method in the couples. Let me give you an example of another method. We had a businessman from New York come here who was a very successful salesman. And he was a con man. You know, he was nice to everybody, always patted everyone on the back. But after a day or two, it became clear that he was phony, that he didn't really mean all that. So what we had him do in the group was to go around and tell each person in the group something negative, something he didn't like about them. And this man found that was very, very difficult, because he just didn't do that in his work. But the group wanted him to do it because they couldn't imagine that he couldn't have some bad feelings by this time. And finally, he got in front of one person, and he began to rock back and forth. And I asked him to stop talking and just keep on rocking. And as he kept on rocking, he began to cry, and his whole memory of never being rocked enough came back to him. And I had one woman in the group then just rocking back and forth, and he just continued to cry. And what came out as he was crying was that he just never got enough of this kind of affection. And what had happened was he built up a whole personality of trying to be a nice guy and getting people to buy things from him, which usually means buy him, as a way of compensating for the fact that he didn't really get enough love when he was little. And once he could realize that and experience it, then all of a sudden he became much more real. The phoniness dropped away, and he began to look at people and see what they were like and get much closer to them and stop just being a phony con man. Now, that would just be one instance of what was done with him. But, of course, we need a whole variety of techniques depending on what the issue is.
Thank you so much for calling, sir.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. We will take our next call from Detroit, Michigan. Miss Conway is hearing Night Call over WJLB. Miss Conway, good evening.
Hello, Dr. Schutz?
Yes.
Yes. I would like to ask you, do you believe that more honesty and could be open toward the students and the younger people in the South, in the small school, what seems to be private schools, from private people? Why I ask you this, because at the age of 13, I had to drop out of school for 6 months to be my mother's nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And at the age of 14, I went back to school and I was rejected. They wouldn't let me back into the school. And so I wrote to the Board of Education, and that was the only way I could get back into school. And when I did get into school, if I made a high mark, I was given the average mark or the lowest mark, and if even the pencil fell on the floor, I was always to the principal office.
Mm-hmm.
Once they suspended me, said, on the purpose that I didn't bring enough paper to school. I didn't do my work right well. I insulted the teacher. So I told the principal he was fat and wore his pants too tight, kept going to school. And I finally finished, but I would like to have your comment on this. Do you think honesty could be brought into the school in the South, which seemed to be private school? Because this school I know about, and several friends of mine and elder people that made comment on this.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the schools are probably where this is most important. As I said earlier, children know this. You know, children have an innate sense of, or I don't know if it's innate or not, but they have a sense when you're telling the truth and when you're not. And they know it whether you tell them or not. And I think that if there's some kind of prejudice against you or some feeling that somebody doesn't like you, this can be brought out and it can be dealt with much more successfully than, for example, the way you were treated. because you had to take this over and over again. When if it came out at the beginning and could be worked on, it could have been done once and for all, very likely. So I think it's really crucial that in the school, the children are treated like they can handle honesty. And I'm sure they can many times better than adults can.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much for calling. This is Night Call in New York, the Human Potential Movement. Our guest tonight, Dr. William Schutz, calling in from Big Sur, California. We'll return to our doctor and to other Night Call guests right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest psychologist William Schutz after station identification. Tomorrow night on Night Call, has Korg on Tom? Conspicuous for his absence at the Black Power Conference this year was the National Executive Director of the Congress for Racial Equality, Roy Innes. Is this another indication that CORE is moving over to the conservative side of the civil rights movement, closer to the positions of the so-called responsible organizations, such as the Urban League and the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People? Does this have even the wider implication that more and more black people are rejecting the advocates of black power, especially when they use words like separatism or phrases like get the gun? Roy Innes certainly has the credentials of a black power militant, but is he consciously attempting to lead CORE back to the mainstream of American life and thought, which is black and white and not mutually exclusive? Has CORE gone Tom with Roy Innes tomorrow night on Night Call? Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call from anywhere in the country to psychologist William Schutz about the Human Potential Movement. Again, Del Shields.
And we return to our guest, Dr. William Schutz. And if you're one of our Night Call listeners, and if the question of honesty has been something that has been plaguing you for some time, you might be interested in calling our guest tonight. And remember, our national telephone number is area code 212-749-3311. We'll take our next call from Tampa, Florida. Mrs. Berry is hearing Night Call over WFLA. Mrs. Berry, good evening.
Good evening. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
Good. Dr. Seuss, on the question of honesty with children, I was wondering, what do you do about the problem of a child who has been adopted by his foster father? How early should you tell him? Should you wait until he starts asking questions? Because how should you handle it?
Well, my own preference would be to always let the child take the lead. That is, you don't have to buttonhole him one day and say, look here, kid, I want to tell you something. But when his interest gets piqued and when he really wants to know, I think is the time you begin responding to him, and then responding very honestly. Answer exactly what he wants to know and tell him what it is straight. But you don't have to beat him over the head with it before he's ready for it.
Right. See, our son was seen by a child guidance clinic, and I did have the problem originally of not really accepting the child because of his father, his biological father and everything. But his stepfather came into his life when he was only about 12 months old, and consequently has been the only father he's ever known. And child guidance kept on stressing the fact that they wanted us to tell him everything. He's only 5 years old now.
Well, could you speak a little louder? I didn't hear that.
Right, I'm sorry. The child guidance clinic kept on stressing the fact that they thought we should discuss it openly in front of him and everything. And I figured at the age of 5 that this is actually too young to do this. And if he didn't have any questions, then why bother to create the questions?
Well, I don't want to disagree with the child guidance clinic that has seen you and your child much more intimately than I have. I would just say that my own preference is to take the lead from the child, as I've said. But certainly, it is crucial to tell him. I mean, he should hear it from you and not from other people, and he should hear it as straight as you can tell him about it.
Right.
Thank you for calling. Thank you so much for calling. This is Night Call in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's our national telephone number. Remember the number for the West Coast listeners, area code 212-749-3357. And speaking of the West Coast, we'll go out to San Diego, California. Mr. Polane is hearing Night Call over KOGO FM.
Hello,
Good evening, sir.
Hello?
Mr. Pullane?
Yes, Mr. Schultz?
Dr. Schultz is listening.
Oh, excuse me. I have a question for you. Can you hear me?
Yes, can you speak just a bit louder, sir?
Okay. Have you received very much cooperation from ministers and the clergy in the form of references and follow-ups in marriage cases?
I can't hear that, Del.
The question was, have you received many references from the clergy in reference to, did you say marriages, sir? In reference to marriage problems.
Do we get references from the clergy? Is that the question?
Mr. Pullane?
Yes?
Would you state the question again, sir?
I want to know if you received very much cooperation from ministers and clergymen in the form of referring marriage cases and problems to you.
Yes, so we not only get referrals from clergymen, but more often we get the clergymen themselves coming here.
Mm-hmm.
Because the clergymen often feel that their training is not relevant to what they have to do. Most of them do a lot of counseling, and they haven't been trained in counseling, so they come here themselves to try and pick up some of that training.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Columbus, Ohio will be our next night call listener. Miss Myers is hearing night call over WOSU-FM. Miss Myers, good evening.
Good evening. Dr. Schultz?
Yes?
I wonder if you are familiar with a book written by Ruhl Howe called The Creative Years.
No, I am not.
Well, to fill you in, because my question concerns Mr. Howe's book, to fill you in about the book, he entitled it The Creative Years, and he talks about years even from the 20s way into the 60s when the potential of the human being is being is at its peak, and where people also come to a point in their life when they realize there are things they have not done. But as far as human potential goes, he really goes very much into depth about what it is to be a person and how you are a person, especially on one of the earlier calls, talking about honesty, you know, what it takes to be an honest person and the strength that we really do have to hear honest words from another person. And he's quite thorough in this explanation of just being a person and what it takes to be a person, the kind of acts of love that one must do to be loved and to receive love. And one of the interesting parts, and one of the parts that still puzzles me, is when he talks about creativity coming not from the removal of tension and anxiety, but from the acceptance of it. And this is a point that I don't quite fully understand, and I'd really like your comments on it.
Well, offhand, I couldn't quite agree with that, because a lot of the creativity that we have is all bound up in tension and anxiety and fear, and that has to be removed before the full potential of the person can come out. I mean, if, for example, you're afraid that if you allowed yourself to get out of control, that is to be free and creative in the sense of not being all bound up. If you're afraid to let yourself go, would reveal some kind of basic weakness. That is, many of us are very tightly controlled because we're afraid that underneath we're phonies, for example, or we're very incompetent, or we're not lovable. And so you keep yourself too tight. And keeping yourself too tight not only keeps out of your own consciousness this fear you have, but it holds back all the creativity. And you find that once you can let that out and face your own feeling of phoniness and work through that, then all the creativity comes out also. So I couldn't quite agree with your author. I would think at least both are necessary.
I see.
Ms. Myers, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We've come to that point in our show where we cannot take any more calls, and while Dr. Schultz is collecting his thoughts for our closing comments, we would once again like to remind our many listeners that we always are regretful when you cannot get through to us, because One of our listeners has called a bit earlier. We're very sorry about it, but we always welcome your comments. And if you'd like to drop us a note or drop us a letter, you may always feel free to do so. And if you have a question that you'd like for us to pass on to one of our guests, or if there's some information that you'd like to receive from one of our guests, we'll be more than happy to take care of it for you. Remember, you may address your mail to Night Call. That's Pomona, P-O-M-O-N-A, Pomona, New York, zip code 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, P-O-M-O-N-A, New York, zip code 10970. Dr. Schutz, we have just about 3 minutes, and we didn't get into all of the aspects of the Esalen Institute, and a couple of questions we'd like to ask you in the closing. One thing we notice is that the courses that are offered are kind of costly. Let's see, it's about $175 for a 5-day workshop and $64 or $65 for a weekend seminar. I would assume that this kind of offering is not available to everybody, that you're kind of excluding a number of people who perhaps may need this kind of training.
That's true, and it's unfortunate. I mean, we are, I guess you could say, artistically successful, but financially we just barely make it. And we'd love to have some donors come along and give us some money that would allow us to get scholarships. But actually those prices cover room and board and tuition, and they just about allow us to keep in the black. Because we don't have large grants from any place. In fact, we specifically don't seek them, because that allows us to remain free and experimental. So that we would love to be able to let in people who can't afford it, but right now we can't find any way to do that.
Doctor, is it possible that in just about a minute and 15 seconds you can give us an answer to this next question? And during this particular period, all of America is being faced with a lot of political rhetoric, and a lot of promises are being made, and a lot of things are being said that we know that following the election will never be carried out. And I suppose in most political campaigns there is very little truth. How does this affect us, those of us who are seeking honesty or seeking truth?
I think it is among the most destructive things that could possibly be. And I think that, yeah, you know, the incipient revolutions all over the country are reflections of this, that people just have to be treated better. They cannot be lied to, and they cannot be evaded. They have to be met and treated as decent human beings. And I think that's really the crux of the whole issue, that we have to treat each other nicer, and we have to be happier. And if we're happier, then the social ills will fade. And I would like it if more politicians had the guts to just stand up and say exactly how they felt about things, regardless of the consequences. My own feeling would be that they would, in fact, do better as politicians. But in the meantime, I think it's very corrosive, and there's a cynical aspect about it that is beginning to backfire all over the country.
Dr. Schutz, thank you so much for being our guest tonight on Night Call. This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station, Roy Ennis, Executive Director of the National Congress for Racial Equality, has CORE Gone Tom. Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.